Now, when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you very much for holding on. Hey, we had a very interesting first hour, just in case you're tuning in. My computer, I know zero about them. I just know what Miss Teenage America and Jay and Sam tell me about them. I'm very, very low tech. But that thing started updating on its own, but we soldiered through that first segment. And we had two great guests on, in case you're just tuning in. We had Paul Brown. Paul Brown, that was his solo flight on Blood River Radio, the old Blood River Radio B-17. Don has been on before. Don is a pioneer, just in case you tune in. I really admire that guy. He started, this, the best of my knowledge, and I think he alluded to it, the very first website radio program dealing specifically just with white rights, the survival of the white race. He was a pioneer of that. Stormfront was the name of it. I don't think Stormfront's going right now, but I'm really excited about we're going to have him on. If you like him, I hope you like him, but we're going to have him on more. We're going to have him on with Sam Dixon and his old co-host Jay. Paul Brown has he has a long history. He has a website up in Pennsylvania, a podcast. He does a lot. If you heard his resume, he's very high tech. Unlike me, I had two high tech guys on, and I was just having a guess of what Don was talking about. Anyway, we're transitioning to the second hour. Everybody's mama knows Paul from, rightfully so. He's been around for years and years, since the late '60s, in being a white nationalist. White rights activists defending the white race, fighting against global white genocide, any way you want to phrase it. He just got back from, he's a traveler of the world. He's been to Colombia. He's been to Italy. Of course, he's from Canada. He just got back from Japan. And I know he's been over to Japan previously, but he just went to some school over there. And he has an amazing story. I'll just give you an update. He's been to Colombia, Italy, Japan, and the dreaded Cuba. But he got more harassment from his own home country of Canada when he just returned from Japan. I'm going to shut up. And, Paul, I know you got a lot of things to talk about, but if you don't mind, tell the people about the story you told me about just what I got to lay out. I set the table right there and dish out the beans and cornbread, brother. Go ahead. Let us know what we're talking about.
Well, Eddie, it was the best of times and the worst of times, as Dickens wrote at the beginning of Tale of Two Cities.
Yes.
Japan is a very interesting, a very modern and country. I'd enrolled in a course in Japanese. Unfortunately, it was misrepresented. It was not beginner's Japanese, and I was going to. I did withdraw, but I was going to spend the next week after the first week. I was going to spend the next week doing some touring in Tokyo. Unfortunately, I came down with a really bad case of bursitis, and it's extremely difficult to walk. And in Japan, you walk. even taking trains and subways, the train stations are very, very large. I had a real time yesterday. I took a taxi to the main, or one of the main railway stations in Tokyo, in Shinjuku. And but where do I find the train that goes to the airport? Well, dragging a very heavy suitcase in a lot of pain, and sometimes there wasn't an elevator. I tried to drag it up steps. A couple of people helped me, just complete strangers. Finally got on the train, and all was well. The lot of really nice people in Japan. Anyway, I had no trouble with the Japanese authorities, and never have. Got back to Canada, and the procedure is you go through basically customs and immigration. And most of it's, you put your passport in the machine and it reads it and you tick off whether you've exceeded your limit or you're bringing firearms or any of that stuff. And then it generates a piece of paper and it's given to a human being. And then after you collect your luggage, you show that piece of paper, and most of the time they just wave you on, you're good to go. Anyway, I got taken aside. And that's the second time. The last time I traveled abroad back in June, I got taken, I was the only person on a plane of about 65 people who was sent for secondary inspection. Now, they didn't do much. For about half an hour, they looked through my paper clippings. And the bright guy said there, "Oh, you like to read?" I said, "Yeah, I kind of like to read." Is that a crime? Anyway, that was not a big problem. Fine. This time again, I get pulled aside. I was kept in detention. That's what they called it. I mean, I couldn't leave for 3 hours. They went through everything in my suitcase, underwear. I have a couple of cameras, which I never use. I should probably not bring them with me, but they're small cameras from what used to be the old days. Now I take all my pictures with my cell phone.
And Paul, this is really Canada now. Moving. This is not Japan. I want our listeners to be clear. This was not, and it was not even, Paul, and I don't want to interrupt you, but you even told me you didn't have that much hell in Cuba, for God's sakes. But go ahead. Go ahead, Paul. Continue.
No, my brief second look in Cuba took about 10 minutes. I'll tell you about that a bit later. Anyway, they went through everything, and my newspaper clippings, and this, and that. And I had two CDs. I don't know what they are. People from time to time give me something and say, "Oh, you've got to see this," or "Hey, this is really good." They didn't have titles on them, so I don't know what they were. They asked me, "What are these?" I said, "I don't know." I explained. People give me things. I truly don't know what's on them. Well, they're very suspicious. They confiscated them, and they confiscated my laptop. I shouldn't say confiscated. Stole. It's mine. I don't have it. They've got it. That's theft.
Yes, they're
examining it for God knows what. I was there for a trifle over 3 hours. I'd already been up for 24 hours because of the time difference, the 12-hour flight across the Pacific, and all that. This is just, do you know why you're pulled over? I said, yes, I'm a political dissident, and this is the way the government pays you back. I don't think they like that.
I don't think so. Paul, I hate to interrupt. I got to say this. Are you, before you continue on, maybe I should wait, but I was going to, they have possession of your laptop. Paul, you're not exactly their favorite person in Canada or the United States. I shouldn't even say this. I don't want to give me any ideas. Because I'd be worried about them planting some kind of damn paraphernalia on that phone. On that laptop. But I gotta shut up. You got me real wound up. I hate to keep interrupting. I gotta shut the hell up and let you go.
They looked at my phone too. I don't know what he was scrolling for, apparently the phone was all right. I don't know what they're looking for. They think I have mine come from the phone, but even if I did, it's a legal book. This is harassment. You know, I'm not carrying drugs. Well, actually, I am, but they're prescription drugs. You know, this is just a guy in his 70s who's kind of crippled, not, you know, moaning the blues, but this bursitis kicked up and flared up in Tokyo, and it's really painful. It's really painful to walk. Yeah, you'd think they might find somebody else to pick on.
Yeah. And like, I know we're going to a break any second now, but you know, same thing happened to yours truly. Oh, there's the music. Well, come, I got something to relate to what you've gone through. Not as severe as what you did, but almost. Dear people of Blood River Radio, we've got a short break here. Don't be gone long. It's a very interesting story that you need to hear. It just shows just how far this damn country and Canada has come. Be right back, folks. But
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
Dear Blood River Radio family, my God, has Canada gone that bad? Yes, it has. You just heard what Paul said. Well, he's not through. But I'd just like to go back. And this is a big point. But I won't talk about Cuba. He's going to go revisit that. But of all the countries he's been, Colombia, Cuba, Japan, Italy, he hasn't had to deal with any of this. He goes back into a so-called white country of his birth, of his residence, and he gets treated like a damn pedophile drug dealer. So I'm going to shut up. Go back to you, Paul. When you get through, I got to relate my experiences at the airport. But go ahead, Paul.
Well, you're right. I've been through a lot of countries in this world. Some of them not very nice. I shouldn't say about Southwest Africa, not very nice. It's for Black Africa, not too bad. I never had any trouble there. I've been to South Africa, both when it was ours and more recently. Never had any trouble with the authorities there. I've been to a number of countries in Central America, Costa Rica, Panama, Mexico, never had any trouble. South America, I've been to Chile and Argentina and Colombia, and never had any trouble. I've been to, I was even in communist Cuba, and it was a usual experience. I'm the one guy. It was a plane load of Canadian tourists. My guess would maybe be 150 or you know, I'm the one guy who sent it for a second inspection. I thought, oh no, they know who I am. it turned out not to be so serious. My passport says that I was born in Colombia, and which is true, but I'm a Canadian citizen. And this really blew the mind of a 20-something little Cuban. I don't know what she was, on security or whatever. But she was having trouble processing this. So I sent to her with the help of a friend in my not very good Spanish. No, I'm not really a Colombian. I said I was. My dad was in the oil business, and he was in Colombia. That's where I was born. I have not been there since I was about 1 and a half, which is true. I mean, it was true back then. That seemed to be okay. I got waved on, and even caught the bus that took us to the resort and all that. So even communist Cuba did not treat me the way my own government does. This business of being pulled aside, I don't even want to speculate what they're looking for. They might be looking for hate propaganda, but it's a computer. The other thing they've got is these two CDs. I don't know what's on them, but I doubt it's anything very serious. I went through a period of like this back in the 90s, where every time I crossed the border, I had trouble. And one time, I was in southern British Columbia, and I drove down to the state of Washington, actually to see something and to do a bit of shopping. I came back, and I forgot I had a bag of books in my trunk. They went through every one of these 94 titles. And the dummy there at the border crossing couldn't make a decision. They packed all of them up, including Irish fairy tales. Honest to God, that's hate propaganda, but they don't know. So if they send it down to Osoyoos, which is about 40 miles away, I got most of them back a couple of days later. I mean, even they could look about Irish fairy tales or an innocuous book about World War II or a book by a British war hero who became quite a writer in Canada. But in the end, they still kept, as I recall, about five of them. They practice active political censorship. And a friend of mine about 20 years ago ordered two copies of David Duke's, what was his second book? Not My Awakening, but the next one.
Jewish Supremacism. He did The Secret Behind Communism, which I've been rereading that. My Awakening, he also did like an update, so to speak, a republishing update of My Awakening. He also did Jewish Supremacism. Jewish Supremacy.
I think that was it. Anyway, then my friend ordered these two books, and they got stopped by the customs in the mail. And I helped write the appeal. You see, I know how to do this once they make a decision. I know how to appeal. You don't always win, but anyway, in the course of discussing it with the customs, I asked them, well, if my friend's books are found to be, you would call them hate propaganda. I don't, but okay. Unacceptable. What can he do? Well, he could send them back to the publisher. Oh, I said, okay, he might do that. Oh, but he can't because you can't send hate propaganda through the mail.
You're screwed.
I said, oh, okay, so she's screwed. Well, then what happens to the books? Get this. We burn them. We burn them. Wasn't it a certain government in Germany that they're always going on about book burning?
Yes.
Book burning. Yes. We burn them. And these people are so soulless. They don't get the irony.
You're going to call you a Nazi now. It's obvious then that the guy's a Nazi if he burnt books. I mean, hell, even an idiot can see that. Yeah, you're a damn Nazi.
but to be fair, the books they were burning were burning their own largely Jewish written textbooks and a huge store of pornography that they seized from a sexology institute, which was actively promoting transgenderism back in the 1930s. They weren't just burning any old book they didn't like, but that's maybe beside the point. But yeah, they volunteered to me that they destroy the books and they will burn them. you can't make this stuff up.
It's just pitiful. I've been harassed. I don't know if they knew who I was, but it's awfully suspicious. Here in the States, you can go and you can, for extra money, I don't remember how much it was. It was less than $100, I believe. You have to go to, I don't remember if it's the FBI or the ATF. I forgot which, because I did it several years ago and I've updated. But you have to go, you get pre-checked. You get pre-checked. Through the federal government, the FBI checks you out and all this stuff. And then when you go through the airports, they check to see if you're a terrorist or if you're, undesirable. And you pay extra. If you get that, you can go through the express line when you're going through the airport, so to speak. You don't have to go through you're not supposed to have to go get checked by the ATF. But every single time, and I've got that, I went through all that trouble, and the very first year I did it, I got pulled over. And this last year, we went to New York last year for the New York Marathon, et cetera, et cetera. And I got pulled over, and get this, in Memphis, I'm going through the airport. And I don't know how well I'm known. Evidently, they must know me pretty well here in Memphis. So I got pulled over by the ATF, and they said, something suspicious here. We're going to have to X-ray you. I didn't want to go through the X-ray machines because they're very dangerous. You got some dumbass running these high-powered X-ray machines put out by that guy, that Jew. What was his name? His name in Russian means the devil. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, I don't like to go through them. They're dangerous, but you have to. I'll get this. I fail the X-ray machine checkout. So then I have to go through, get fondled down. They start patting me down. Well, I fail the first pat down. And I said, well, look, I can just get butt naked. That way we can skip this. It won't bother me. I can walk through the airport butt naked. I'm not shy. I don't give a shit. I just want to go get on the plane to go to New York to run the marathon. Well, no, you can't go butt naked. We can't let you do that, because I was really getting pissed off. So they call this other guy. And they're both, I'll just call them Spicks because my English is not that great. I think some people call them Hispanics. They're just all Spicks to me. The son of a bitch could barely speak English. So I'm raising hell. He calls his supervisor over. So they bring the supervisor over. Guess what? He can barely speak English too. And I said, you know what? Both of you sons of a bitch, you're talking to a combat veteran here of the United States. I said, where were you in 1967? Where were you in 1960? Where were you at Tet in 1968? You know. And I said, your ass is probably, I bet you hadn't been in this country 6 months and you're fondling me down. Well, I failed the second fondle. And so finally got some other creep over there, and they patted me down again. Lo and behold, after going through the X-ray machine, after three fondles, I finally passed. And I said, well, what the hell did you find? What made you, why I failed? They couldn't come up with it. The reason why I failed. Was it a machine gun? Was it a grenade? Anyway, here the commercial. We got to leave. We'll be right back in a few minutes, folks. You got about 4 minutes. Be right back, folks.
How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. In his nationwide address Thursday evening, President Trump again called on Congress to ensure ballot integrity by passing the Save America Act. On the Salem News program this week on Capitol Hill with Tony Perkins, House Speaker Mike Johnson said that's likely to happen as early as next week, tying the legislation to a major reconciliation bill.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. The reason we have to get Reconciliation 3.0 done, it is the vehicle for us to deliver the Save America Act to the president's desk. It is the only way to do it, because remember, there's no way to get 60 votes for Save America in the Senate. The Democrats just simply won't go along with that, and you've only got 53 Republicans. We're going to make it a reconciliation matter, tying it to the budget with a fiscal impact that will qualify it for that process so we can pass it with 51 votes in the Senate and finally take care of this problem.
Former Deputy National Security Advisor Katie McFarland is weighing in on election integrity concerns.
Following President Trump's address on election integrity, former Deputy National Security Advisor Katie McFarland says foreign adversaries are increasingly using technology and social media to influence Americans and shape public opinion.
One great strength of America is our elections, right? We choose our own leaders. But it's in some ways the greatest weakness, especially in the era of social media, because they can scramble with our brains, whether it's China using TikTok to feed a certain narrative. So they're it's like a disinformation campaign.
McFarland appeared on Salem News Channel with Larry O'Connor. Willie Nelson, The White House.
Health experts are warning people to be wary of all that wildfire smoke moving down from Canada. They say it attacks nearly every system in the human body. Officials in Texas have implemented major changes to improve flood warnings after last year's deadly floods in Hill Country. They passed laws for better early warning systems and infrastructure improvements. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Larry Elder here. These words weren't written for history books. They were written for you. But it's hard to pursue happiness when pain is part of everyday life. Relief Factor was created to help people address inflammation, one of the most common causes of ongoing aches and pains from aging, overexertion, and just good old daily living. It's a 100% drug-free, research-based formula that works through multiple metabolic pathways to support comfort and mobility. No prescription, no masking symptoms, just real relief so you can keep moving forward. I take Relief Factor every single day, have done so for years. I don't want my pain to come back. As America celebrates 250 years of independence, give yourself the chance to reclaim yours. To commemorate, we're offering a special patriotic price, just $17.76, so you can pursue your happiness being pain-free. Your $17.76 three-week quick start is ready for you. Relief Factor, because freedom just feels better without pain. Visit ReliefFactor.com, that's ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help. And thank you for joining the fight.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to kick ass on the airport one more time. We've just talked during this break. Me and Paul talk about the hell we got to go through the airport. And they never find anything. Even after you go through the x-ray machine multiple times, you get fondled two, three times by different fondlers, you know, the head fondler in chief, etc. And they never find anything. But meanwhile, I was telling Paul, you see these women, these big fat Muslims with these decked up from head to toe. You can't even see their feet. The only thing you can see is a little slit right in front of their eyes. And their clothes, I was telling Paul, I know he knows what I'm talking about. Their clothes look like they're made of old army blankets. They're OD green or dark brown, sometimes black. And they go through nary a problem. No problem. Sail right on through, man. But then you got a citizen, a vet coming through. The name of the game is harass your ass, and that's for sure. Well, you know, Paul, we were talking about, we were going through, I'm going to try to recap some stuff we didn't get time to do on the first hour. I don't know if you've been keeping up, but the Supreme Court here in the United States, they just recently ruled that in favor of anchor babies in anchor. So a woman, she could come from Mexico.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
Oh, it come from anywhere in the world. As long as she can make it across that line and drop that baby out, they're automatically citizens. The Supreme Court ruled against that, ruled in favor that they can. So the anchor babies are here to stay. And I saw this one article was written by, I forgot who it was. It was off of American Freedom News. Incidentally, I called Don Wassel today and told him the American Freedom News has not been updated. I'm sure he's familiar with the problem. But it said, Paul said that in 2025, which was last year, there was 250,000 anchor babies that they'll admit. It probably, if they'll admit that, golly, no, probably three, four, five times that. 250,000 anchor babies, and that's before the Supreme Court ruling was passed saying that they can't have anchor babies. So when a woman comes in here, all she got to do is, she's like a football game. She makes it 1 inch into United States soil. She can have an anchor baby. It's bad enough. It was bad enough to have free money here. The free money signs on the border of the United States and Mexico, where if you just make it across the line to the United States, you get free money. You get free house and a cot. You get put up in these fancy hotels. When I was in New York, I saw them. They had these illegals. Well, they're no longer illegal. I guess we're considered illegal. They put them at fancy hotels, free food, free money, the whole nine yards. Not only that, now, as long I know I'm repeating myself, now they said to the world, come one, come all. Nigeria, Chad, Mogadishu, Ecuador, whatever, any non-white country in the world, all you got to do is make it come here and drop these babies out and just flood us. But and we talked about it last week, Paul.
And the country that I love the most for its name is Gabon.
yeah. Well,
it's the same name as a deadly snake.
it is a deadly snake.
From Gabon, pop out a kid. Yeah, the way it'll work, Eddie, is 18 years later, when the kid's an adult, it's an American citizen, it can sponsor the whole family. This is being organized, by various people, but the most dangerous are the Red Chinese. They're doing this wholesale. They are shipping over legions of pregnant women with just that intention. Drop the kid. And if, in most cases, they won't stay in the U.S., but go back to China in 18 years' time, that little one Hung Lo is an American citizen with full rights. You've got to give it to the Orientals tend to be play the long game. That's why the Japanese industry was so successful in the 70s and 80s. They weren't worried about the next quarter. You know, how can we screw the workers or cheap out or whatever and make a bigger profit in the next quarter? They looked at, well, how, where will we be in 5 years?
Yes.
If we treat people right, turn out a good product, we'll be, you know, doing really well. And, you know, in a real nutshell, that was part of the reason for the Japanese huge economic success. Something that has hit me the last two times I've been in Japan is what a miracle that country is. It was only opened up to the West by Admiral Perry in 1857, I think.
That's right.
Within 100, they had virtually no industry. They had very primitive firearms. There were about where we were in the 1600s.
That's
within
true.
Within 100 years, actually within 50 years, they had industrialized and militarized that they were able to take on Imperial Russia and hand their butt to them in the war of 1905. That's within 50 years. And within another 50 years, they had, you know, had this catastrophic loss in World War II. And yet the generation that lost the war, you know, what in North America we call the greatest generation, they dusted themselves off, went back home, and created, you know, this economic miracle. And Japan had, not every place in Japan, but Japan had, big cities like Tokyo had been devastated.
Oh, yes.
And Tokyo was largely wood, and there was deliberate firebombing of residential areas. They lost about 125,000 people. Civilians in Tokyo. You know, they did the same thing to the Japanese the monsters did to the German people. And of course, so you know, what hit me was this. You went from a feudal society to a first world society. You beat a major European power in a war. You lost a war catastrophically. You picked yourself up and it became an economic success all within 100 years. I mean, something, Jehoshaphat, you've got to admire that.
You know, you're absolutely right there. Just in, Will sent me a thing. He said, talking about that, we were talking about anchor babies here in the United States. He said that Germany did the same thing with Turkish anchor babies. Those babies became adults and moved in tens of thousands of Turkish immigrants into Germany. I've heard people that live in Germany and they call them, they said that one of the worst things you can call here in the United States, you call somebody, call a nigger, that's supposed to be the ultimate insult. But if you call somebody a turkey, they said, call them a turkey, that's considered like calling somebody a nigger here in the United States. But you know,
turkey.
Yeah.
Love it.
The
big mistake in Germany with the Gastarbeiter, you know, the guest workers, is they were not made to be just guests. They were allowed to kind of stay. And that's the mistake we're making with our so-called temporary foreign workers. The guest workers should have been guests. You're here for, you know, your contract 2 or 5 years, and then you've got to go back home. Sunshine, go back to Turkey or duck or wherever you came from. No, they don't like to be called, they now want it to be Turkey, not Turkey.
I've told that was you don't want to call a German. I knew GIs that went to, there were some people actually were stationed in Germany, some in Korea, etc. But yeah, they said that was one of the worst things you could call them. You know, my dad was in the Second World War. I go off these rabbit trails, and my God, you talking about somebody hated Japanese, but later he smoothed out. And you talking about their industry. You know, the number one. I saw a sign the other day. The number one selling car in the United States of America right now, they said, was a Toyota Camry. And well, you're right back in the 70s for a while. I think the American United States auto industry was in trouble, and the Japanese auto industry was really trying to go for the knockout. I wish that the Germans had got more Volkswagens and things like that in here because they're white. But it wouldn't. I wish they would have. But I think there's probably a greater prejudice. In fact, I'm sure. I've never heard of a Jew going off and being prejudiced toward Japanese. But my God, they hate Germans and Russians. My God. So I don't.
The story I was telling you about the Russian success in the war. Japanese success in the war with Russia. You know, I've got to admire them. They become so proficient so quickly.
I'm going to do a quick break, Paul, while I hear the music.
I want to come right back to that for a moment.
Yes. Be right back, folks. Got about a 90-second break.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something. Real Blood River Radio family, I appreciate y'all people hanging on. We'll be bringing Will Franklin some coming on third hour. But getting back to you, I'm going to go right back to you in a second, Paul. But, you know, the Jews, God only knows, we said they hate, I guess the only people they hate worse than Russia would be Germany. I don't know, maybe it's a tie. But, you know, in that war, Japanese war against Russia, Jacob Schiff, one of the hit the time, he was a huge even in those days, he's big-time international banker. I think he came to own Cuban and Loeb. He was hooked up with the Bush family, at least his progeny with the Bush family in the Second World War. But anyway, yeah, he gave massive loans to help the Japanese in their war against Russia.
That was the point I wanted to make before the commercial break.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I give the Japanese top marks for their proficiency in that war, but they were funded to do it by the Jewish interests who just hated the guts of the Tsar and of the Russian people. And as we know, the so-called Russian Revolution, that's a misnomer. It wasn't Russian. It happened in Russia, but it wasn't Russian.
You know, I've been reading a little bit about that, well, rereading, and a lot of people like me didn't know. You know, there were so many revolutions, 1905, 1907, I think maybe 1912. There was a March Revolution, 1917. The biggie was, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the November Revolution of 1917. It was between the Menshevik, right. the Menshevik group and the Bolshevik group. The Bolsheviks won over. Interestingly enough, the Mensheviks, they were more moderate. They wanted to bring a new change of the guard, a new government in, but they wanted to do it gradually without being so brutal. And I don't mean to get off in this rabbit trail. Without being so brutal and just, what's that word I'm looking for? Autocratic.
There are a number of lessons there. They were kind of a dog's breakfast of interest. There were, you know, it wasn't just one thing. They wanted change in Russia.
Yes.
Not all of them were even against the Tsar, but they wanted
change.
That's true.
That's true.
But they were not well organized, whereas the Bolsheviks were. And the interesting thing was that initial revolution, which caused the Tsar to resign, where were the major mostly Jewish communists? They weren't in Russia. They didn't pull off that initial revolution.
Sure didn't.
Trotsky was in New York City. Lenin was in Zurich, and they beetled back to Russia, and they managed to overthrow the Mensheviks because they were better organized and more ruthless, and then you had the real revolution. And you know, maybe one of the biggest mistakes Germany ever made was that they allowed Lenin passage in a sealed railway car right across Germany to Russia. But while they were thinking correctly that the communists would pull Russia out of this very unpopular war. And so that did fit the German war ends. It's just that it brought along other very bad things that perhaps people could not have foretold. But wow.
They came back and they worked the First World War kind of I think Lenin wanted to sue for what it wasn't that long after the Bolsheviks took, correct me if I'm wrong, until after the Bolsheviks took power, they immediately tried to sue for peace. This was during the First World War. But later, in fact, I think it was Jacob Schiff that supplied the gold to Leonid Lev Bronstein, who became Trotsky. He took that gold, and he left from, didn't he? I think he left from Canada, Bronstein, on a ship from Halifax on the way to, if I'm not mistaken.
They came up from New York, and they landed in Halifax, and the Dominion government wasn't sure whether to let them gold.
This
odd shipload of these Lower East Side Jews.
The greasy ass Jews.
Pretty sketchy shit. And I think at one point I did know, but somebody very high up then said, let them go. I'm not sure I can recount it. But anyway, they ended up in Russia, and they were the organizers and the perpetrators of the real revolution, which turned Russia into a communist country.
You know, they carried that gold, like you mentioned, on the railroad car all the way across, dragging a free passage back to World War One to Russia. If only they could have seen. If only the Germans could have seen the long term effect of that. But kind of switching gears a little bit right now. You know, I was telling some people the other day, I think it was just yesterday, I remember when Nikita Khrushchev was, he was the head honcho of the Soviet Union in the late 50s, early 60s. I was in grammar school even. Paul, I remember when Nikita Khrushchev with the United Nations took his damn shoe off and beat on the desk and pee out through the shoe. I'll beat on the desk, say, we'll bury you. It scared the living hell out of me. I was in grammar school. He said, we'll do it. But then he said, we'll do it without firing a shot. But I remember, and he said, we'll do it without firing a shot. You know, Paul, and fast forwarding to the day, he was right, Paul. We have a communist mayor in the largest city in the United States, in New York City. We have a communist city in Los Angeles. They just had a communist mayor was elected in Denver, Colorado. Where was he right, Paul? Is it communism going to, is it all the way in the open now? Will communism succeed here in the United States, or will this point, or will, as Churchill said, and Don Black brought this up the first hour, Churchill, he wrote a paper back in the 20s saying there's a war between the Zionist and the communist for the soul of the Jew. Well, will the Jews in the United States, will they continue to communize, or will they go over and become Zionist? I know that's kind of a long stretch. What do you think? Is the United States going to go communist, Paul, or will these Jews finally say, no, we don't want to be communist? Is there going to be a fight between Zionism and communism here now? I guess that's what I'm trying to say, within the Jewish hierarchy.
Well, there certainly is within the Democratic Party. And it's quite surprising that a strongly anti-Zionist group of candidates, including the mayor, succeeded in a very Jewish city like New York, where there's a very substantial Jewish population, but also a lot of non-Jewish whites who have been sufficiently tamed, you know, who adopt Jewish issues, who are very pro-Jewish. And you think New York City would not be fertile, like very fertile grounds for a Mondami, but that's not the way it turned out. We are living in interesting times.
Yes. You know, I was up there, I don't know if I should say this over the radio, but I know they were having these marches, these communists, and I discussed some of the communists with the communist kids and asking them, how many, do you have any idea how many millions of people have been killed by communism? It's probably it's killed more people than the AIDS virus, killed more people than COVID. But I did help them, I will confess, I did help them carry their Palestinian flags just to rub crap in the face of the Jews there in New York. But, I probably shouldn't have done that. But I tried to discuss it with them, and I never dreamed that they would win, the communists there. That was in 2024, mainly, and some in 2025. I never dreamed, because they were marching right in front of the New York City Public Library. By the way, this is an aside. If you ever get a chance to go to New York City, anybody, and I'm not a New Yorker, I'm a hardcore Southerner, but I tell you, you got to give it to New York. They have some of the most beautiful buildings in the world. I can see you can spend a week touring the Central Station. This is kind of an aside. And the New York Public Library, I was on R&R in Europe. The New York Public Library, the architecture and the beauty, I think, can match any place I've ever seen. It's so beautiful there. But, you know, Paul, it's so sad and alarming that the communists have taken over that. Things that beautiful buildings, agriculture, and architecture and art that our white people built, being taken over by communists now. I just, like you said, we live in interesting times. I just wonder where it's going to end. We shall find out, my brother. We're getting ready to be in. Take us out, Paul. Take us. You have the last word before we go to.
The other thing that worries me is. If New York becomes a more and more third world city,
yes,
these will be like in another 50 years, it'll just be like the pyramids. Who built these things? They're fine monuments, but the people who built them, the people who appreciated them, will be gone, and you'll have people gaping at them the way other people gape at things like the pyramids. Who built this? Because of the present population of Egypt didn't build the pyramids.
Oh, Paul, I think I barely hear the music. We've run completely out of time. I can barely hear the music. We've run completely out of time. Paul, I've had a wonderful, this one of the funnest segments I've done with you. God bless you. I hope you're going to be ready to rock and roll next week, my brother.
I will. Yep.
Well, you have a good time up there and try to keep out of trouble with the Canadian ETF.